And we're back.
Where's our opening crawl?
Dueling lightsabers and... There you go. That's as close to a John Williams score as you're going to get.
And blown out of the water. We're done.
Why is my family dead? Yeah, Mike, and Oscar, we're doing a pseudo-Oscar sprint. We're cheating our own rules a little bit, bending
it's
like Beckham.
Such a movie event that we wanted to cover.
We needed to cover, because everybody in
visual effects
the world. Yeah, exactly.
So
yeah.
It counts.
You get a costume in there. It is Star Wars The Last Jedi, Episode 8. Rian Johnson, writer and director on it, taking the reins from J.J. Abrams, who set up Episode 7 with The Force Awakens a couple years ago, the big comeback trilogy for the Star Wars franchise. Only the biggest movie franchise in the history of the world.
Most
no big
lucrative,
deal.
Man. These last three movies, $2.2 billion,
yep.
And then $1.2 billion, and this movie's probably it's kind of tracking the same way Force Awakens was. It's going to come in just a hair under.
Do you think
it.
Bob Iger like gets excited about anything anymore? The CEO of Disney. Do you think he bothers?
He just buys other things for $52.4 billion.
He can't possibly feel joy anymore, because once you've hit these marks, I don't know what there is to get excited about. But that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with
the world.
Yeah, a Disney property, which is what Star Wars is now, as everything is these days. The Last Jedi opened in theaters this past Thursday.
We saw it together yesterday.
We saw it yesterday, Saturday. Mike and I went to the IMAX and we sat side by side. I posted my ticket stub up on our Instagram page, and that's where we're going to start, as we always do. We want to hear from you guys, and I think we're going to about this episode.
Yeah.
We're going to hear from you guys about our thoughts on Star Wars. You want to get in touch with us, Mike, and Oscar on Facebook, Mike, and Oscar on Instagram, MMO_pod on Twitter, Mike, and Oscar@gmail.com. Please keep your curse words to a minimum so we can read them on air.
Well, this is a polarizing movie. Right
to
now,
say the least.
And we have a very definitive take
yes.
on it. We're going to get in your face.
Which is
face.
The correct take, by
we're
the
gonna,
way.
We're either going to gain listeners or we're going to lose them all right now.
This could be the last episode of our podcast. This could be, yeah, episode, what, 17? Could
or
be
the start of a new rebellion.
I teased on Twitter last week that we had episode 16 coming out, which was our Disaster Artist Oscar Sprint profile. Mm-hmm. And so that made us twice as good as any episode 8s that were to come out this weekend. So that's good.
That was a joke in there?
Yeah, well, that was a joke I put on Twitter. But the giggles, yeah. But this is what...
I'm laughing at the fact that you consider that a joke. I'm not laughing at the humorous punchline that I almost feel like the Big Sick and Camilla Nanjiani is like, oh, yes, I like my jokes thoroughly explained. That's terrible.
So here we go. We know this isn't going to be nominated for the big Oscars. We like to focus on the big Oscar nominations, big Oscar movies. But we just couldn't ignore a movie event of this magnitude that draws this much money, that is this culturally relevant. So this is the Mike, and Oscar review of The Last Jedi Episode 8. Here's how we're going to handle it.
Yeah,
we're going to start like we do. We're going to treat it like it's an Oscar sprint profile. We're going to give it
a
non-spoiler. Talk about the specs of the movie, the financials, all the information, production profile Mike's going to give you. And then we're going to have a spoiler section. The spoiler section for this pod is probably going to be longer than usual, because we figure everybody and their mother has seen this movie by now this Monday.
Yeah.
We wanted to get into the ins and outs of it, the audience reaction, the critical acclaim, what problems with the plots there may be, basically a couple of the reviews that you and Mike and I have read, and we're going to address all of that in the spoiler section. So we're going to have a relatively short, God willing, non-spoiler section. Mike has been chomping at the bit to say everything about this.
Even though, yeah, I got a lot of information for you right off the top with our production profile. A lot of information that I don't think you're getting out there in terms of all the promotional footage and all the promotional interviews. I do recommend watching a bunch of those. Those are fun, even though, I mean, and by maestros, people atop the industry who know exactly how to pitch and sell a movie.
I thought it was an interesting choice to include Luke Skywalker in all the promotional materials and kill him off in the first minute of this. That's a joke.
I cried when they all died in the beginning.
Yeah.
As my uncle always says when he pretends to spoil.
Having to go claymation in episode 8 was really an odd direction, I thought, that Rian Johnson took the series in.
Well, I mean, the
let's start with a serious production profile now, and we'll get into what actually happened with The Last Jedi. Go ahead, Mike.
The code name for this movie in production was called Space Bear. So listen to those, Rian.
Space Bear!
Bears. Space Bears?
Space Bear.
Listen, the story inception, Rian Johnson was working with J.J. Abrams, Kathleen Kennedy, and the entire team at Lucasfilm, basically at the production stages of Episode 7. This is Episode 8. So these guys have been working together for a while. After Colin Trevorrow got fired by Lucasfilm and Kathleen Kennedy there, it wasn't a huge shocker to anybody that J.J. Abrams was brought back in to do Episode 9. And, it, you know, they've already worked together before, Rian Johnson and Abrams. Rian Johnson, his brief kind of miniature biography here, he is the director of Brick and Looper.
What do you think Rian Johnson's Sith name is?
Rian John Sidious?
Yeah, there you go.
Rian Johnsatine?
Doth Johnson.
This is getting to nerd levels I never thought we would do. But listen, I mean, just...
Doth Johnson is a good penis nickname. Go on.
He is the director of Brick and Looper.
And that's it.
Yeah,
I mean those are the mainstream ones. Yeah,
Brothers Bloom, a bunch of episodes of Breaking Bad, and certain TV. He is a guy that kind of takes his time and just puts out a good movie every 5 years, a good product every few
years. Chock full of plot holes. We're getting into Looper. That movie has got some questions, more questions than answers.
Listen,
as may arguably Star Wars.
That child performance is so bad that.
You've talked about this before.
I'm still mad at those parents. They need to ground their son after that performance. He is grounded. I'm sorry. That's a terrible kid performance.
But I'm out of line when I criticize a cat actor in Harry and Tonto.
There's a performance in this movie. Rian Johnson's not good with those kid performances. That kid needs to be grounded. You're grounded for life.
That's a good name for a TV show.
Yeah. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Bruce Willis, Emily Blunt, Jeff Daniels are in Looper.
Also probably played Stormtroopers in The Last Jedi, as everyone else did.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt is also the star of Brick. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is a Stormtrooper in this movie? I don't know. But Tom Hardy is, by the way. Anyway.
And Prince William and Prince Harry and Daniel Craig was once upon a time.
To start from the beginning at the end, Johnson has already written a treatment for Episode 9 with his team. He has submitted it to J.J. Abrams a while back. J.J. Abrams and his writing team have reworked it. And as of Saturday the 16th, J.J. Abrams has pitched the plot for Episode 9 to Disney CEO Bob Iger. And they are full speed ahead on the next movie.
Bob Iger. What brings him joy? What brings him satisfaction? Does he, his life has just got to be a perpetual disappointment because he's done everything. There's no mountain left to conquest.
Well, he just bought
Fox. Yeah, he owns Fox. He bought his competition. And he's sitting on the most lucrative film properties ever.
The man is owning the media world at the moment, for no question about it.
To be a fly on his wall.
Listen, Kathleen Kennedy
and
Ron Bergman are the producers for Episode 8. Kennedy has been the face of these new Star Wars movies, and she's done nothing short of create the most lucrative 3-year franchise in film history. If Abrams and Johnson are Kylo Ren and Vader, she is the Palpatine or Snoke. And every nerd in the world is saying, "Her parade!" The porgs are screaming. Freaking hamster birds going nuts. So yeah, she's a genius and a tremendous story architect in her own right. I wanted to take the time to give you some information on Kennedy. She was a theater actress, then a location manager. Then she worked for San Diego TV as a camera operator, video editor, floor director, and finally a news production coordinator. Her resume then goes to produce a local talk show. Before she jumps into the movie world and becomes assistant to screenwriter John Milius, who wrote Conan the Barbarian and Apocalypse Now, amongst other great movies. John Milius, and this is crazy, you know, the Kathleen Kennedy story started with The Flop, 1941, the legendary Spielberg, George Lucas flop starring John Belushi. Steven Spielberg directs it. It's a famous bomb. Kathleen Kennedy is assisting John Milius. She works a little bit with Steven Spielberg. Steven Spielberg steals her from John Milius, and she becomes Steven Spielberg's secretary. She's his secretary for a few years. Next thing you know, she's getting involved in the associate producing on Raiders of the Lost Ark and Poltergeist. Her star is on the rise. Every job she gets, she does one better. She becomes a full producer on the Spielberg film and hit E.T. the Extraterrestrial. Spielberg then joins forces with Kennedy, partners up with her permanently from basically that point on, when she, her future husband Frank Marshall, and Spielberg formed the company Amblin Entertainment. So you're very familiar with that. Every movie from your childhood that you watched that had Spielberg in the title credits, you know. So in 1981, she's involved with all these movies. Her filmography is staggering. You know, she runs that studio until 1992. She also does a lot of work with Clint Eastwood movies. They still work closely after she goes off and forms her own production company with Frank Marshall. She still works closely with DreamWorks and Steven Spielberg. And she was a driving force behind both Jurassic Park and Schindler's List, both sides of the spectrum, the blockbuster and the...
Getting decent reps over there in Hollywood.
Yeah, she's getting serious reps. She continues to work with Spielberg all the way up until 2012's Lincoln. I remember, you know, going into our podcast on 2012's Best Supporting Actor with Lincoln. She was in a lot of the promotional interviews.
She's been around. She's getting... I mean, she's attached to some major, major projects.
In 2012, she was hired to be the co-chair of Lucasfilm alongside, you guessed it, George Lucas. Disney buys Lucasfilm, and Kennedy is named the Lucasfilm president, and the rest is box office history.
Literally.
Yeah. Kennedy's, you know, to give family background, she has a twin sister who's also an executive producer of the virtual production company at Profile Studios. Kathleen is still married to Frank Marshall. She has two kids, and of course the rest of her progeny is a filmography that is perhaps unmatched by anyone. My God, there are so many good movies in there that it is staggering. So yeah, that's Kathleen Kennedy. There's no surprise.
Decent profile. She's doing okay.
She's doing okay. $1 billion. Pew, pew, pew.
Yeah.
No surprise, John Williams was brought in to work on the score for The Last Jedi.
He gets nominated for The Post. This score is worse than The Post?
Well, but here's the thing. I learned about this. I didn't know this either, and you don't know it, but I didn't know that you can't be renominated for the same work, even if it's like, you know, of the same flavor of
a prequel. I don't care about these rules.
Academy rules. Kathleen Kennedy famously fired Lord and Miller for Solo, A Star Wars Story, and she rehires Ron Howard. Well, not rehires, but she hires Ron Howard, longtime Spielberg and Lucas contemporary and friend, to take charge of it. It shouldn't have been a surprise, but it kind of was a surprise. Anyway,
caused some waves.
She also didn't get along with Colin Trevorrow on the upcoming Episode 9, like I referenced. Rehired J.J. Abrams to take charge of that. It's also...
The budget for Episode 9 has got to be just unlike anything we've seen.
It's up there. I mean, listen, she's also been reportedly offering Rian Johnson his own trilogy. And again, if you're going to offer Rian Johnson his own trilogy, we better do it like 4 or 5 years in advance. You know, the man takes his time in terms of pre-production.
And it's about to take off, too.
Right, yeah. I mean, he said he's got other ideas, but he's also said he's starting to eat the elephant. And he's starting to, you know, down this path of coming up
eat
with another...
the elephant?
I guess that's a saying.
That can't be a saying.
Well, he wants Have you ever to eat- take it one bite at a time. The only way you can eat the elephant is... one bite at a time.
I was going to let it go, but I've never
heard.
Well,
he's taking on a huge project. Yeah, I got some weird
Where did you get
sayings.
The elephant?
He said it in an interview. Rian Johnson did.
This man can't be trusted.
And yet we got a freaking vegetarianism scene in this movie. God damn it. Anyway, the cast brings back Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker.
All your favorites. All
Carrie
your
Fisher
favorites are
in
back.
Her final performance, and of course, our condolences to
God
the Fisher
rest
family.
Her soul.
You love a lot of the documentaries about Carrie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds,
and the grace and class with which Princess Leia is handled in this film is heartwarming.
Listen, she is hysterical in her own right, Carrie Fisher.
Oh yeah,
in her audiobooks. So if you haven't listened to The Princess Diarist, going back to the one about her shock therapy experience. Anyway, all the way back to the first. Anyway, she has 3 audiobooks that are memoirs that are freaking hysterical. She had a one-woman show that came out on HBO, and then
you're going way too far. Just watch her cameo in Scream 3. That's
listen,
all you need to know about
Carrie Fisher. Another documentary on HBO. She's in the greatest scene of When Harry Met Sally. Mike is going to punch me.
Which doesn't exist.
Anyway, Carrie Fisher is in her final performance as Leia Organa. in this movie, because sadly she's passed on. Anthony Daniels is also C-3PO. Those are the people who have come back from the original trilogy. There are some more smaller ones, but those are the big names. Much of the Force Awakens cast is back. Daisy Ridley returns as Rey. John Boyega as Finn. Oscar Isaac as Poe Dameron. A lot of single-syllable first names for those characters.
They fit very cleanly on toy packages.
Andy Serkis as Snoke. Again, one syllable. Lupita Nyong'o as Maz. They have a formula going here. Mm-hmm. Dom Hall Gleason as Hux. General Hux. Gwendolyn Christie's Captain Phasma coming back, Game of Thrones star there. Newcomers to Star Wars in Episode 8 are Benicio Del Toro as I don't know his name. Kelly Marie Tran as Rose. Here we go again with the single syllable words. Laura Dern is Captain Admiral Emmeline Holdo, so she gets more than one syllable.
And purple hair.
Leading into production, Rian Johnson quotes the following films as major influences, and I thought this was kind of curious. The Bridge on the River Kwai, which is one of my all-time favorites. Gunga Din, Three Outlaw Samurai, The Bogart Sahara, not the McConaughey Sahara. The Bogart Sahara, Letter Never Sent, and oh yeah, I guess all the Star Wars movies.
You don't say.
That's a terrible joke. The Last Jedi was filmed in Ireland, Mexico, Iceland, and good old California of the U.S. of A. It was codenamed, as I said, Space Bear.
Bear! Space Bear!
All right, Mike, send it over to you for some specs.
Yeah, we're going to talk about box office numbers that The Last Jedi. I would like to remind everyone, this movie came out Thursday, all right? It's Monday you're listening to this. It's Sunday we're recording it. This movie came out Thursday. So we're talking hours old, this movie is. Premiered December 9th in L.A. was its grand opening. It went 12/15 again Thursday wide on December 15th. Writer-director Rian Johnson, he of Looper and Brick fame, like Mike told you. Distributed by Disney, as all things are these days. 152-minute runtime. So we're talking 2.5 hours plus of you sitting in the theater. I could not find a listed budget for The Force Awakens. For The Last Jedi. But The Force Awakens budget was $245 million.
Right.
Avengers Infinity War is rumored to be about $300 million. So you have to think it's somewhere in there.
Wikipedia says it has to make $800 million to break even if you do the two and a half times the box office.
Somewhere around.
That equals
250 to 300.
Right,
yeah.
Can't do math. And I've gone cross-eyed.
After one day in theaters, it became only the second film of this century to have a $100 million-plus opening during its premiere day in theaters. And total gross is expected to have approached $220 after the weekend was done, but we just checked right before hitting air just now on IMDb.
But, Mike, cinema's dead.
Yeah. Cinema's dead.
It's going away. It's going to streaming.
Surpassed $220 million.
Troll you. Cinema, whining.
Surpassed $220 million domestically, by the way. It's at 400 and some odd worldwide gross, and Mike said it needs to make $800 million, and it's done half that in 4 days that it's been out.
Unbelievable.
You would think people are going to see this more than once, too.
Yeah, I mean, earlier in the weekend, it was projected 215, 425. Now you're saying the projections have skyrocketed to almost, 250 and 450, you said?
IMDb has
those
numbers.
A lot
numbers.
Of numbers
yeah.
That my brain didn't
yeah. IMDb has the numbers. As of December 17th, which is today, the gross in the U.S. is $220,047,000. Cumulative worldwide gross, they list at $450,047,000.
Yeah, so it's already overperforming. And 228 was the record, I want to say, for Force Awakens. So it's creeping in on that. We got the rest of the Sunday here while we're recording.
We're at midday Sunday right now, so it's going to, we got... It's hitting numbers.
Like Looper, we're going back and forth with a few in the past.
And also, I hate children, so we got a couple similarities there.
I'm so mad at that kid.
Like I said, $220 million after all said and done for the weekend. But amazingly, surprisingly, not everyone is in love with it, which is going to be a big theme of this podcast. It has been completely snubbed from award season by any of the major award shows for the big awards, or even the lesser critic circles. No best picture, no acting credences given out. Kind of taking the L there. Not that it's ever
It came out late. Nobody saw it before.
Did miss the screening deadline for some big award shows. Critics' Choice couldn't get it in time.
Right.
So it's...
I don't think it cares.
It's not made. It's not an acting movie.
$2 billion
It's not a movie made for Academy Awards.
But visual effects kind of voted it in for a lot of different award shows just on footage that they showed voters on a reel.
Yeah. I mean, and the visuals in this are... We'll get to it. It's stark. Striking, really. While it has a strong 7.9 IMDb rating as of checking just a few minutes ago before hitting air, the grade is actually falling as it was an 8.1 rating as of early Friday. It carries with it an 86 Metascore rating from Metacritic, and though I usually advise not putting a great deal of weight into the Rotten Tomatoes scores, The Last Jedi carries a certified fresh rating at 93% on the tomato meter, whereas its audience score stands at a mere, was 57%. When I did the research, it is now 56% and falling. Average audience rating of 3.3 out of 5. Unbelievably low.
A lot to say on this. Pre-spoilers and definitely post-spoilers. I got a major analysis, as does the blogosphere out there.
Force Awakens in the same audience score category was an 88%. It is The Last Jedi, again, with that, we'll talk 57% for its audience score. Well, it's 56 now. It actually was tied for the lowest score among Star Wars movies with Episode 2, had the same audience reception as the fucking Clone Wars did, and is now lower than the Clone Wars. Figure that one out.
Voting bodies are weird, man. It did get an A cinema score from audiences on day one. Maybe that was just from the, you know, the loyalist... fans.
Yeah, depends what audiences you're asking, it seems like.
Right.
I mean,
it's weird.
Yeah. Just for frame of reference for other movies to see what their the Rotten Tomatoes cinema audience score, I'm sorry, is. Justice League. Relative flop. We talked about it on a previous podcast.
Should not even be in the same sentence.
80% audience score. X-Men Apocalypse. 68%. Again, we're talking 57, 56% for Star Wars The Last Jedi.
There's a troll out there for every
Power child. Rangers, 66%. Warcraft, 77%. Murder on the Orient Express remake, 58%.
I'm starting to get angry.
For a 57% audience score on Rotten Tomato, all right, movies with similar audience scores throughout history, you have to go back to such cinematic classics as the Kirsten Dunst 2004 movie Wimbledon, or the 2009 Nicolas Cage sequel movie, Bad Lieutenant 2, Port of Call, New Orleans.
It was no Bad Lieutenant 1, starring Harvey Keitel, let me tell you.
So that's what we're dealing with. We have, I mean, I can't remember a massive blockbuster so well received by critics, so panned by audience members.
It's very polarizing.
It's about extremely half and half. Polarizing, and it is making massive amounts of money on the other hand.
Right. You have a lot of people who love it, a lot of people who get very angry at it, and we're going to tell you why. Yeah.
So let's start with expectations going into this movie like we do with all our Oscar sprint profiles. What were your expectations?
Yeah, they were kind of high.
You would think so?
But listen, here's the thing. I expected an A- as I got out of the last two Star Wars movies. The Force Awakens was just that comfort food, good time that we all forgave for having the same exact plot as A New Hope.
Right. Right. I mean, that's the new setup for these movies that are redone or reboots 25 years after. Creed was a Rocky retelling, right?
Right. We were... just
Force Awakens is a New Hope retelling.
We were just so relieved that it was well done, that we got our creature feature fix,
right,
that we got our fun characters. But J.J. Abrams, the setup artist that he is, set us up for the same kind of plot line as the old familiar story went that they did with Jedi and with the first Star Wars of all time in 1977-78 there, A New Hope. Now, the last two movies were very funny. They had great action. The visuals were spectacular. In my opinion, Rogue One was one of the stronger Star Wars efforts in a long, long time. Like I said, The Force Awakens had a lot of that good candy popcorn movie feel to it.
I'm glad Rogue One, just for my two cents on them, I'm glad Rogue One wasn't an official episode in the chronology of it all. It was a nice side picture, and I think that kind of lowered expectations, and it hit the sweet spot. I mean, you have arguably the greatest Darth Vader scene in any of the movies in Rogue One. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it does its job without being the grandness of scale that the episodes need.
So yeah, I think a lot of people went into this movie, The Last Jedi, thinking it was going to follow The Empire Strikes Back track, and it does in many ways, but it does not in many more. And I say, I emphasis on the word more. Many more ways it does not follow The Empire Strikes Back. And in a sense, you get that Empire Strikes Back trademark in The Force Awakens with the Han Solo scene at the end of that movie. So even though it's not the same kind of reversal slash reveal slash whatever whammy you want to call it, but it's a big, it's definitely a scene that on the bridge. And yeah. Empire Strikes Back is basically redone in The Force Awakens. That's why I compare the two. Now, like I said, Rian Johnson was being rumored to get his own trilogy, so that affected my expectations as well. And I figured that this was going to be well done. Obviously, the critics' reviews came out a few days. I didn't read any of them, but I saw the percentage, 93%. So I had a high bar going into this movie. And even with that all that buildup, I walk out of it twice, you know, twice in the weekend.
Ready to sword fight somebody with a lightsaber.
I was pumped, man. I enjoyed it, and it kind of, in many ways, it surpassed my expectations. I kind of, in a very cynical way, did not expect the screenplay that I got. I didn't expect the story that I got, and I'm very happy for it.
We saw this movie. I saw it for the first time. You saw it for the second time on Saturday. When I left the theater, the first thing I said to you was that that was the best Star Wars movie since Episode 4 or 5.
Yeah.
I went
home. I remember
home.
Because you're a loud talker and a close talker.
I'm the character from Seinfeld.
He's one of those audience members. Like, my dad's this way, too. He's got to tell me every thought he has so that everybody walking out of the
He's
movie theater
over
can hear it.
Speaking thing. I think
as
I said,
we walk
I think
out
I
of
said
the movie.
Five words to him during the whole movie.
Him and my brother are the same way. My brother's literally in the bathroom stall. Talking about the movie to us while
hilarious.
We're washing our hands in the bathroom.
While a group is gathering because everyone just found the bathroom.
That was, that was funny.
I let it digest. I let it marinate because I do have a tendency to overrate movies right after I see them. And it has its problems, but I still think it's one of the stronger Star Wars episodes. I mean, I'm not as big a Star Wars nerd as you are.
Right.
I wasn't as crazy about The Force Awakens. I had just actually seen that for the first time prior to going to see this one. So I know it's crazy. I know. I'm sorry. But I thought this was an incredibly strong movie. So if you're looking for two people to kind of get your catharsis out and that you hated this movie, I don't know that that's what you're going to find here, but maybe we could help change your mind.
Did you just, like, have pizza for the first time yesterday? Did, you know, the human race convinced you to, like, give that a try? Or ice cream? You saw the freaking Force Awakens the day before you saw...
He's too busy watching Legion.
Yeah. The production values, to segue, the visual effects of this movie blow you away.
It's nothing close to... You can't fucking compare it to anything.
I mean, honestly, if they just take the motion capture stuff, maybe the Snoke scenes, the Maz scenes, maybe they don't quite measure up to the War for the Planet of the Apes. But War for the Planet of the Apes is like we said, skirmish for the Valley of the, you know, the Apes. It's not the scale of this one, and it doesn't do any of the other stuff in space or whatever that this movie accomplishes. So the variety of special effects, the space opera, you know, planet hopping factor that this movie shows you so much more. It's so much more ambitious, so many more settings, so many more types of action scenes, so many more types of plot lines. It's like five great movies in one.
I mean, it genre hops.
Genre
you know?
Hops.
It's a heist movie. It's an action thriller. It's a suspense movie. It's, you know, it's a getaway movie.
But there's an effect in this movie, like the truck flipping over in the Dark Knight, that I seen the first time, and the whole audience gasps, except for one man. He's sitting across from me right now. He just, in a very Peter Griffin voice, he just goes, "That was sick." The whole theater is silent, and this guy goes, "That was sick." And that voice, like, he can't help himself. It was hysterical. Oh, my God.
I like to take things in stride.
You had to be there. Visual effects. You did like them, yes.
Yeah, the
Don't
visuals
rethink
were,
that.
I mean... The callback alone, there's a critical scene in a movie in a planet that's white and it's like it's Hoth. It's like a nod to Hoth, the planet Hoth from the first trilogy, but it's instead of snow, it's covered in salt.
You've seen it in all the trailers. Yeah,
and the reason it's covered in salt is so they could have that stark red against the white.
On all the posters.
Oh, my God. It's so beautiful.
Production design, visual effects. It needs to win those things. I don't care that we have a beautiful production design for Darkest Hour. This movie is taking us to outer space, and it's more believable than anything else.
Yeah, in that way, we bang the drum about the cinematography of Dunkirk.
Right.
Like, the effects of this are just so heads and shoulders above anything else.
If it doesn't win, people are freaking crazy.
The only reason it wouldn't is the snobbery the Academy has towards blockbusters.
Yeah, could happen.
Which it's been kind of been cutting into the last decade or so. It started with The Dark Knight, you know, recognizing Heath Ledger's performance. They opened up the Academy, the Best Picture category, to top tens because it snubbed The Dark Knight out of the Best Picture. It's getting to more accepting of those big budget blockbusters. So hopefully it will be the case here.
Listen, we said back in our 2001 Best Director three-part pod that during our Lord of the Rings talk, we were really enthused by the fact that Peter Jackson's commitment to
practical
effects would become the new normal in Hollywood for the best franchises out there. And obviously for the franchises that have struggled, they've went in the opposite direction. It's very cut and dry in that regard. J.J. Abrams for The Force Awakens made a commitment in the same way. Kathleen Kennedy and everybody at Disney, they made a commitment in the same way to practical effects. And apparently this was the movie with the most practical effects in terms of Star Wars creatures, over 200 of those made with hand puppets, and there's some puppets in this movie that will drop your jaw.
Yeah.
There's more practical effects in terms of the visuals than you could totally get cartoonish time and time again, but going back to like the George Lucas philosophy back when he made the 1977 film, this movie is showing you real things. Showing you real things on screen, and that just convinces you that it's real, even though we're a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. So for that is the magic. If that's not movie magic, I don't know what is. This movie needs to win for visual effects.
What had better visual effects, this movie or Bad Lieutenant 2, Port of Call, New Orleans?
That's a toss up there, Bill.
What about audio? What did you think of the? I mean, you know, you're dealing with the John Williams score. You're dealing with the space sounds and the lightsabers and the blasters there. Pew pew pew.
It's elite as usual. But yeah, there's a lot of previously awarded music, like I said, previously nominated music, like I said. So John Williams is not going to be up for the best Oscar in this regard. But it's so wonderfully familiar, this soundtrack, even though they give a kind of a new take on the Star Wars soundtrack, with exception of the opening crawl there.
New take on a lot of things Star Wars in this one.
Yeah, but the sound effects and the sound mixing is brilliant. There's so many little things. Yeah. And that's why the more you watch this movie, the more the rewards it has. There's a ton of Easter eggs. There's a ton of little things that you could just savor. This is a big meal. Like, if you compare it to a meal, a lot of the critics have comfort food, like they said. But it's also has a lot of flavors to it. And there's the sound mixing and the sound effects is just so cool. And if you're a nerd about that stuff.
The polish that you see on screen.
Either Dunkirk or Star Wars has to win for the sound categories. It's just so simple. So best production value for you, Mike?
The visuals.
And I agree.
That planet alone, just when you see that red underneath the salt for the first time, and you see how it's going to be incorporated and what that scene is used for, it's beautiful. It's actually, I mean, in the way that Dunkirk or Lord of the Rings or something like that sets up the cinematography of it all by showing you the landscapes and all this, Star Wars kind of uses their palette of colors to bring you into the battle scenes and into the landscapes that they've made up, and it's just incredible.
There was one planet or sequence that we'll get into during spoilers that was a little more cartoony than the rest, but it was still, I forgive it because it was so funny and it was so much fun that I don't care. But even that, you know, paid off in really, really great ways in terms of visually, I'm talking about, where they escape, the different escapes lead to different, totally different visuals than where you start. obviously this movie is a feast for the eyes. So,
and there's stuff they get away with that's like, you could just see how far technology has come, which is, I mean, yeah, they use a lot of practical stuff, but like you have a close-up of Supreme Leader Snoke, and it's right. like, it looks like it's an actual person that's there that looks like that, as opposed to CGI Andy Serkis or you know.
Yeah, I mean, they gave General Tarkin a lot of crap for being more obviously CGI, even though I just watched Rogue One again this morning and I couldn't tell.
Yeah, I don't think that's
I'm going to be fooled by robots in my future self-lifetime. The motion capture is extremely it's incredible. Good with Snoke. And that's a weird kind of cartoony kind of character with all his obvious, you've seen it in Force Awakens, his
fixing a divot!
And, yeah, you got divots in his head, divot head there.
Yeah.
Andy Serkis voicing him.
I mean, it's no X-Men Apocalypse as far as visuals go, but it's...
That's a great
performance. I'm just going to keep referencing these terrible movies that are higher scored.
That's a good segue into
Warcraft, as far as mocap had it beat, I think.
The Force Awakens. Listen, I hated Leia's performance in The Force Awakens. I thought she was maybe rusty. She wrote a lot of great books in the interim.
Well, The Force Awakens wasn't a Leia movie.
Right.
I mean, it was a Han Solo movie.
Every one of her scenes, even the one with Han Solo, she's just like mumbling to herself, to her hand, and she's... I didn't even know what she was saying the first time I saw it. Second time I saw it, it's a little better, but she's bad in that movie as much as we love her, and... She's really good in this one.
She's fantastic in this.
I think...
I have a problem with the Jedi religion, but we'll get to that in spoilers. Cool. But
I was also down on the Oscar Isaac role in the first movie. I don't think they let any of his scenes breathe. I thought they rushed them all. And a lot of the joke... Well, a couple of the jokes, which is rare for Star Wars. When they do put a joke in there, it's usually pretty good. But a couple of the jokes kind of fell flat for me upon rewatch of The Force Awakens.
Well, that's another thing that was so striking to me is that, I mean, it has to do with somewhat with the performances, but how funny this movie let itself be.
You know, comedy, as Jordan Peele had said, is more about the timing. It's more about the pauses and to quote Dave Grohl from Sonic Highways in a musical sense. It's about the space between the notes. It's a lot about that in comedy.
Yeah,
it's what you never do because we talk over so fast. Anyway.
What? No, you're right. I mean, it's...
Oscar Isaac is fun. Every character
Is funny. Has their
Everybody
moments.
Has a punchline.
Even the dark side, yeah. I mean,
it's great, and maybe it's because they allowed this movie to be 2.5 hours instead of just the 2 hours. It's got to be 2 hours. That's it. You know, Kathleen Kennedy said, all right, I'm working with a great filmmaker. Let's let him make something that 3 hours, and we cut it down to 2.5, which is what happened, instead of 2.5 down to 2 or whatever J.J.
Right.
Abrams did. But yeah, I mean, Leia, I thought, earned a lot of acting points with me. I love the fact, and I'm going to get into this in spoilers, they finally made her character a mentor. I think that's so freaking refreshing, and it's about gosh darn time that you have a female mentor for a Star Wars hero.
I have so much I want to respond with, but I can't.
So we're not going to just respond about that now. I'm just teasing it. And Mike is starting to fume, and we're both getting hyped up now. This is going to be fun. I love the addition of Laura Dern. I love the addition of Tran.
You could put Laura Dern in an underwear commercial, like selling dirty socks or something, and I'm in.
I was worried about her character as it was progressing. I don't know if that's the same for you.
I was too, but then,
wow, what
everything
a great
has
payoff.
A point, yep. And that's another thing. It's so, I mean, it's a big blockbuster, and it has all the bells and whistles to put your ass in the seat and sell you on it, but you have a complete story here. You have there's not a lot of loose ends that the critics, I use critics in the sense of people that dislike this movie, want you to think there are, at least not to me.
I don't know, man. I think the last movie just gave you what you wanted.
It was
day,
a Star Wars
every
movie.
You weren't worried about what we had to expect. The characters were never so in jeopardy that you were freaking
it
out
was
about
a, last
you didn't
movie,
know
I felt him. Like The Force Awakens was a love letter.
You didn't know them that well. And look, Trey Parker and Matt Stone said The Force Awakens was like a reunion episode of a great sitcom. It reminded them of the Happy Days reunion.
It was.
Episode.
That's
And where every character comes out and gets their round of applause. Even with the stakes of that movie that it wound up with, you still had that kind of structure to it. Now, which is surprising because of what happens in that movie. Right. However, this movie definitely subverts a lot of your expectations. And I was just thrilled at where they took the Dom Hall Gleason character to get back to performances, the General Hux character. After the first movie, he annoyed the crap out of me at the end of The Force Awakens.
He's actually the one
giving
character,
the Hitler speech, the fascism speech to all the troops.
He's actually the one character I had an issue with what they did with him. I mean, because, and I can say it here, they kind of, instead of being this big evil overlord type, he kind of was used just for comedic effect.
But and you like, laughed at the jokes.
Right. But the air the air was kind of taken out of him a lot of times as far as what his authority is.
I wasn't crazy about that, but.
It is what it is.
For the same
Adam
reasons,
Driver, I think.
The same reasons I like that.
Yeah. Adam Driver, I think, stepped up his performance a lot.
Oh, yeah.
But the script called for it. And it was a great job with his character.
Oh, yeah. He was great.
You could say the same
man.
About Daisy Ridley. I mean, you could say the same about Mark John, Campbell, yeah, certainly, obviously.
The John Boyega performance, again, was a lot of fun. He did a good job in the last movie as well. And the fact that he got to play alongside the actress Tran for this movie, she did a great job, great addition, the actress for Rose. A lot of these characters raised their game, were more familiar with each one of them. We got to know them. But yeah, I mean, Mark Hamill, to me, stuck out. I thought it was his best performance ever in a Star Wars movie, no question about that. I know a lot of people love his voiceover work for Batman cartoons, etc., etc. But this man did a tremendous job in this movie. He's a comedian when he needs to be. Mm-hmm. He's the tortured mentor when he needs to be. He's the subject of flashbacks, you know, pulling off scenes in that regard. And you know
what?
I had
this conversation. Go ahead.
When he has to be the star, you know, when he has to do the movie star stuff.
He's got to be Luke Skywalker. He's Luke Skywalker, yeah.
Yeah, I was thrilled with him. He's my best performance. Your best.
What do you think Mark Hamill like does anymore? Because there's no way he works. He hasn't had to work since 1977.
He's been in a lot of movies. I watched him in Brigsby Bear.
Yeah, he's been in a lot of random stuff. He's like been a parody of himself. The Joker job. I think he probably took because he was bored. You know, walking around his house looking at all his trinkets.
He's the voice in a lot of video games. Yeah. He's the voice in a lot of cartoons.
But talk about a guy that's never had to work a day in his life after a certain point, you know? He got it made in the shade. But yeah, he was great in this movie. I actually liked Adam Driver's turn. I thought was a really great performance. And I liked how they handled Princess Leia, knowing that Carrie Fisher is no longer with us.
Yes.
I thought her performance was handled with a lot of grace and class.
Classy. Yeah. We'll tell you why, but I thought that was terrific as well. They don't screw up the tough things, Star Wars.
Yeah,
so they set themselves up for a lot of difficult story movements going from 8 to 9 now. But again, I think they pose these challenges for themselves, Disney, and they figure them out. So I got confidence in that.
I can't remember if it was the Slash Film article you sent me or if it was one of the others, because I did read some other reviews after I saw the movie. But one of them said that 7 was supposed to be the Han movie, 8 was supposed to be the Skywalker movie, and 9 was supposed to be all Leia, which surprised me because Leia's featured prominently in this one too. But now it's kind of like, where are they going to go, knowing that they can't use Leia? They've already said they're not going to include Leia at all in 9, even though they have her rights from her family. They're not going to show Carrie Fisher.
Kathleen Kennedy said it.
So it's going to be interesting to see.
Do they change their mind is a question. They have changed their mind before. They did rework the script since she said that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I said, they just pitched it yesterday to Bob Iger. So maybe, and again, General Tarkin was awesome in terms of his CGI. The Snoke was awesome. Can they create another classy addendum to Leia's character? We will see. We don't know. We're not going to spoil it.
So that's going to do it for us. We called an audible like Peyton Manning at the line back in, you know, 07, 08 there.
Omaha!
Yeah.
Omaha!
Yeah. We were going to do this all in one shot, but there's a lot.
You're not getting the spoiler music now.
There's a lot. Well, I'll be the judge of that. Thank you very much.
Okay. Maybe you
there's
will.
A lot to say. We go very long in our spoiler section, so we kind of loop back around.
Give them the spoiler.
Throw this ending on there. But we're going to give you a spoiler-filled Last Jedi take. That'll be coming out later this week. Possibly Tuesday, maybe Wednesday. Depends, frankly, how fast I edit and how quickly we can get those up.
You're the man.
If until then, you have this non-spoiler part. We want to hear from you guys. We want to know what you think, what your thoughts were without the spoilers. You know, what did you think, basically, the overall general layout of Star Wars The Last Jedi? Where do you think they may go for Episode 9? We have our thoughts. Those will be coming out soon, but want to hear from you guys.
Get at us.
Mike, and Oscar on Facebook. Mike, and Oscar on Instagram.
MM&O_pod
on Twitter. Mike, and Oscar @gmail.com. Mike just said it. spread the word, guys. We want to help you out through these big movies. We want to help you out through award season. We want to be there, be your little release from life and reality for a little bit.
Please help.
Why do we want to be your relief from reality, Mike?
Because reality sucks.
That's right. So watch movies with us. Thanks for hanging out. We'll give you the spoiler. We'll finish this Star Wars episode later this week. And I wish we had some big John Williams music to go out to, but we don't.
You do have some music. Just give it to him anyway.
We'll drop the spoilers at the beginning of the spoiler section. Later, guys.